Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Now back at home, a frightening surge in problematic cocaine use among teenagers as young as 13 across all parts of urban and rural Ireland. That's the startling picture being put forward by staff at Ireland's largest drug treatment organisation as they call for more treatment facilities but also greater awareness of the problem along with prevention measures from a younger age. Our reporter John Cook has been meeting counsellors and service users at Cún Mhuire and he joins me now from our Limerick studio. John, let's start with the organisation. Tell us a little bit more about Cún Mhuire.
Yes, Mary. Well, Cún Mhuire is described as Ireland's largest drug treatment organisation. It has centres in Cork, Galway, Athy, Newry and Brewery in County Limerick, where I visited today. And this centre specialises in the treatment of polydrug use. Currently, there are 125 male and 25 female residents taking part in a 20-week addiction treatment programme. Many of them have waited many months to get here, with Cún Mhuire of warning of a 3-month waiting time for bed spaces that are in high demand. They've seen a threefold increase in calls for places here in the past 2 years. And while polydrug users are using many kinds of drugs, management say the biggest problem is almost exclusively related to their cocaine use. To find out more about the problem, two current residents of Cún Mhuire in Brewery agreed to speak with me. The first, Mary, is Connor. He's from Finglas in Dublin. He's 25. And despite what he calls a good family background, he said his life spiralled out of control after years of cocaine use. On average, he'd spend €900 a week on this habit, and he resorted to crime to feed it. Connor told me that this all started when he was just 13 years old.
Yeah, it was about 13 when I did my first sniff of coke, and ever since that day, like, every time I tried a new drug, I thought, oh, that's acceptable, that's okay, everybody else is doing it, you know, like that, so I just continued on to do it, and it didn't bother me. Like, didn't.
And were you smoking joints before that then?
Yeah, I would have been wouldn't have been a heavy smoker now. I'd smoke from time to time, like, but
earlier than 13?
Yeah, but it was about 12, let's say.
And this was commonplace for you and your friends?
Yeah, Jesus, yeah. Like, socially acceptable. Like, it was the social thing, it was to fit in, like, it was all an image, like, we're learning about image and all in here, so it was all just a front, just to be accepted by everybody, you know, like that. So.
And you mentioned going on to other drugs, or was it primarily cocaine you stuck with over the years to come after 13?
I would have used a lot of head shop stuff as well, like the snowblow out of the head shop. Like, that messed me up for a while, but like then I started dealing other drugs so I could afford to buy anything.
So you were dealing drugs as well. How did that come about?
I needed a bit of extra cash, like, so I started dealing in small quantities of hash, and then I started dealing heavy amounts of cocaine, like big amounts. Like,
who would you be selling that to? Young people as well, kids?
No, not necessarily. People, a lot of me customers would have been older than me, to be quite honest, because I was only about 15, 14 or 15, 16, 17 when I was selling large quantities. Like, well, a lot of guilt and shame over that as well today, you know, like that. So
you've been in jail for dealing drugs as well, have you?
Yeah. I did a few months for dealing a bit. I actually got caught with a good bit of weed,
And how was Mountjoy?
It was bad, it was very bad. It took a bit of my life away from me, you know, like that. Like, I went in there, strung out on drugs, and I came out that a little bit worse. Like.
And why was that? You were exposed to other people taking drugs? You were taking drugs in there, or what?
Well, it was more of or I can take more drugs than he can, you know, like that. Like, I can take this amount, and just being the hard man, you know, like that, like, thinking I was the big macho man and thinking I could do whatever I wanted, like, no disregard for everybody else in my family and my life. Just didn't care, really, like, when I was on the drugs, like, but I do care today. I care where my life was going now, you know.
And what's happened? How has it come to a head? Is it your family that had stepped in, or what's changed that made you seek help?
Or it was me. I had to change my life around. If I didn't, like, I would be in a box, like, genuinely, and I know if we go back out to those drugs, like, we will end up in a box. So I'm 25 now, I'm sitting in a treatment centre, which could have been anything in my life, you know, like that. Like, and now I have a big regret I have in my life for not going and doing what I should have done, because I was always an intelligent young man as well. So if you have the choice, if your friends give you the choice, make the right choice and don't pick up the drug. Like.
That's Connor, and he's from Finglas. But John, this isn't just a Dublin problem or a Limerick problem.
No, Mary, and management at Coonvira have said that while cocaine was once concentrated in cities, it has now reached every corner of rural Ireland at a scale never seen before. And they say teenagers in rural areas are just as vulnerable as those in towns and cities. Residents at the centre in Brewery come from right across Ireland, and they told me that drugs, including cocaine, are easy to get wherever you come from. One young man from Wicklow told me Ireland has become awash with cocaine in recent years. His name is Graham. He's now in his early 30s, but he says it's only now that he's finally facing up to his addiction, which began with drinking and smoking hash not long after primary school, but quickly moved on to cocaine. It started, he said, on a night out in a rural pub with friends, and he was only 14.
Up there, like in rural Wicklow, you'd be able to go out to the pubs and people wouldn't ask for ID or anything. And I was in the pub and I just seen lads taking it, I just asked for it, and that was it then, just spiral, just...
Can you remember how that felt, or feeling addicted, or that you wanted it again, or...?
I made me feel confident wise, like, very confident, and just made me want more of it, like, afterwards, you know, like, I would have went back to school, and through that year, I was doing my junior cert then, and through that year, I would have been taking it every weekend, and then after that, I'd done my apprenticeship, and I would have ended up in Waterford in college for 6 months. And that's where I really went. That's when I was getting paid to go to college, and I just took a lot. Was taking it nearly every weekend. And
so you're just spending all your money on cocaine.
Yeah, every penny I ever earned would have went in cocaine. Yeah, and I went to Australia in the recession. I would have thought, like, I didn't have a cocaine problem then when I came back, because I wasn't using it. But when I came back, the country was flooded with it.
When was that?
2014. I was sent home. I was overstaying my visa in Australia and I got sent home. And
but you felt the country, Ireland, was flooded with cocaine?
Yeah, I was readily available. Like, I could get cocaine before I could get weed. I used to ring a lad looking for weed and I get cocaine. I have no weed, I just coke. When I started working, I was getting €800 a week and I was spending it all on coke. And I wouldn't be able to pay for my keep at home or anything like that.
So your parents were very aware of this?
All my parents, yeah, they were very aware. I wasn't earning any money. Let's say I missed work or that. I was still taking drugs, and them drugs have to be paid for. The crunch would come down on a Friday evening, the phone would be ringing, and people would go mad looking for their money, and I'd no other way to go about money to go out to my parents.
So your parents would have paid your drug debts?
They would have gave me loans to pay.
They weren't threatened directly by dealers, were they? Or
no, that was the whole aim for it, was to keep dealers away at my front door. I came down here in 2015... people-pleasing, to be honest with you.
People-pleasing. Your parents asked you to come here, was it?
Yeah, my parents would have asked me to come. And
so you came to this treatment centre, but what happened?
I came here and I had no interest in giving up drugs. Like, within 2 days, I was back on it. I went home, and for the last 4 years, it was turmoil, the amount of drugs I was taking. Every day of the week, I was taking cocaine the last 4 years. I rang here at the start of April on my own accord. I just picked up the phone and then my parents come home and just said, here, I'm at the ring in the treatment, and they were delighted to work.
Are you just pleasing people now, or do you think something's different this time?
No, I'm doing this for myself now. My father, my mother and father are getting on now, so I want them to have, I want to be around, like, you know, that kind of way. My father said to me one time, I don't want to have to bury you, you should have to bury me, and that would have hit me big time, you know. And I just, I really wanted this time. I haven't for it anymore, so there should be awareness out there. Just say no to the drug, like, if you're offered it, just say no. Say no and look it up online. There's loads of places to look now. When we were youngsters, we didn't have Google or anything like that. The schools never told us anything about the awareness of drugs. Didn't care, really. I don't know if they didn't care. I don't think they were too aware themselves, Just don't touch it.
That was Graham from County Wicklow. John, you've been speaking as well to a counsellor at Coonvira.
Yes, Mary. Senior addiction counsellor Michael Geeran's been in Coonvira for 15 years. A couple of years ago, he said they'd an average of 75 people on their waiting lists. Now it's more like 250. And almost every call they get in Brewery, he says, relates in some way to cocaine use. While his message is about greater treatment resources today, Michael also stresses that awareness and education are the bigger issue, as he feels we're not properly tackling the prevention of drug use in Ireland.
We are providing a certain amount of supports for people who find themselves in difficulty, like we do in Brewery. They are hardly plentiful enough at the moment to me, such is the scale of the problem. But I think if we are ever to get a handle on the addiction and drug dependence in Ireland, we have to develop a robust system and maybe make it part of the post-primary curriculum for education and prevention. because the young people that we meet here in their early 20s, it's not a lot of time since they were in secondary school, and each and every one of them will tell you that they knew nothing of the dangers of drugs and drugs taking when they first picked up.
We talk more about an acceptance or an understanding that drugs are available to younger people, be it through harm reduction measures like drug testing at music festivals. You don't think that's the way to go?
At music festivals, it's probably better that if somebody is taking MDMA, that they know that MDMA is not laced with something that could be life-threatening. However, I think the whole harm reduction agenda, correct and all as it is kind of based around an acceptance that young people will take drugs. And sadly, there doesn't seem to be any message out there to tell young people that you don't necessarily have to take drugs to live in Ireland as a young person in 2019.
Michael Guerin of Coonvora speaking to John Cook in County Limerick. Now, listening to John's report, Dr. Chris Luke, consultant in emergency medicine and honorary senior lecturer in public health in UCC. Chris Luke, how dangerous is cocaine?
Hi, Mary. It's profoundly dangerous drug, and sadly it's particularly associated with violence. So, 30 years ago I remember the movie Scarface with Al Pacino featuring a profoundly violent ending culminating with the gangster chief having a mountain of cocaine on his table and, you know, wielding machine guns and so forth. But wherever you find cocaine, you will find violence. You'll find violent death, and you'll find violent sudden death from strokes and heart attacks and seizures. So cocaine is a huge threat to the public health service and also to the public well-being in terms of violence on the streets.
And does cocaine have an image problem? And I mean it like this, that people perhaps still think of cocaine as the drug of the rich, the wealthy, the trendy crowd in the urban areas, and not the drug that's in towns and villages in Ireland and on the streets of towns and cities every weekend. And indeed, from listening to Graham there, literally all the time, it's all around us.
Yes, I mean, that the first issue is that it is available in every townland and parish on this island. And of course, the same applies across the Irish Sea. The cocaine has been around for thousands of years. Of course, it grows as a shrub on the side of the Andes, and it affords enormous resilience and strength and tolerance to the people of the Andes who live in parts of the world where there's little food and little oxygen. But when you turn it into powder and you start sprinkling it up people's noses, particularly in high society, for example, in Vienna, where Freud popularized it, it's proven incredibly difficult to eradicate, as difficult as any contagious disease. And I heard of an interesting observation there last week by a celebrity chef in London who says, we are now the first generation who are dying more often from what we ingest than from infection. In other words, ingestion of stuff like cocaine is killing more people now than infection will. So cocaine is difficult, and it's nicknamed the devil's dander for good reason. And people like Robin Williams infamously said decades ago that it was God's way of telling you're earning too much money. Ultimately, it's an economic mirror. As long as there is an excess of prosperity in the island, everybody has enough money to afford several lines. And once you take several lines of cocaine a day, a weekend, you come quickly become addicted.
The connection you outline with violence, and I'm sure what you see in emergency departments, is it still mostly young men? We heard ages as young as 13 there. Have you seen that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, 13 is unusual, and you're kind of thinking of you know, Dickens and, you know, Oliver Twist and, you know, the young rascals around the streets of London in Dickensian times. But, you know, boys of 10, 11, 12 will drink and smoke joints and will take powder or pills if they have access to it. And of course, it largely depends on what's going on in the child's house or in their general social milieu. But certainly, it's mostly a male issue. And you'll have heard of the figures from Coonvora, I mean, where it's a sort of 4-to-1 male-to-female ratio. That would be a fairly typical ratio around the world of a 3-to-4-to-1 male-female ratio.
And you'll remember back in the 80s and the Tony Gregory days, it took a long time for the authorities to wake up to the heroin difficulties and heroin problems in inner city Dublin and even put anything in place to try and deal with it. Is it cocaine now, and are we failing to wake up to what is going on?
Well, you're absolutely right, Mary, because I was working in St. James's Hospital in 1983 when the heroin epidemic was just kicking in, and you know we did have the antidote naloxone or Narcan, and you know we began to use it more and more every single day with the heroin victims. Unfortunately, I think cocaine is a parallel problem. Heroin is very much, a disease of privation and poverty. Mm-hmm. Cocaine, sadly, is a disease of prosperity. And we've seen it time and time again over the last 100 years, since the 1850s and 60s, when it first came into Europe by way of Vienna. When you have a downturn economically, you then see the consumption of cocaine falling off. And similarly, when you see an upturn, you'll see an uptick in the consumption of cocaine. The only thing that's guaranteed to reduce the use of cocaine in this country is relative decline in prosperity.
Recession.
Is recession.
You heard Michael Guerin, the addiction counsellor, talking to John there. He raised this question around messaging, around harm reduction. I know you work with young people at festivals and all of that. Are you concerned around messaging, the start slow, start low, go slow, the messaging around drugs at festivals? Is it a mixed message and is it a wrong message?
I am very concerned, Mary. I mean, I've been involved in what's called club health or nightclub medicine for 25 years, which is about keeping young people safe, whether it's from alcohol-related complications or any kind of drug or whatever. And I do think that there has been a subversion of the American First Lady's infamous "just say no" observations, which in retrospect were relatively naive. She said "just say no," in other words, N-O. That was then subverted and twisted into "just say no," K-N-O-W, by the sort of some of the drug lobbyists. And there's no doubt that the messaging has become very mixed, because there's increasingly a lobby that says it's all about the dose. If you can calibrate the dose, you'll be okay. And I would argue that's not the case. A teaspoonful of cocaine powder can and often does kill people who've been taking cocaine regularly for years and years and years, for some reason, reasons that we don't understand. Tiny amounts of cocaine can suddenly kill people. So there's no such thing as a reliable or safe dose of that or any of the head shop drugs or spice or snowblow. And it's very difficult to try and counter that idea that somehow drug taking should become scientific with drug testing at festivals. I have my doubts, and I really, really do want to see that being proven with proper science.
Dr. Chris Luke, thank you indeed for joining us this evening. The HSE's Drug and Alcohol Helpline is 1850 459 459, or you can look up drugs.ie.